And you welcome back to the second hour of the programme. Donal Cavan with you until 12 noon today. Don't forget, if you want to make contact with us, you can text us on 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000, 00353 74 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialling area. Now, we got a response from the HSC to a query that we put in yesterday. You may recall, if you heard yesterday's show, a caller made contact, and this is what they said. I wonder, have you any additional information on the fact that Letterkenny Hospital's crisis is now impacting on elderly residents waiting to go into respite at St Joseph's Community Hospital in Stranorder? Poor elderly people who are used to St Joseph's now are being farmed out to private nursing homes when it's their week for respite. This is ridiculous and unfair. Just because management at Letterkenny Hospital can't get their act together, it doesn't mean that poor elderly people should be farmed out to places they're not used to going to. Many of them have built relationships with the staff in St Joseph's and know what to expect. Consistency is important for them. St Joseph's is now accepting over 65-year-olds from the overflow at Letterkenny Hospital. This isn't safe for current residents. It's exactly what happened in New York during COVID when ill patients were brought into nursing homes. There are many contagious illnesses apart from COVID that can be dangerous to elderly people. Now, we put that to the HSC yesterday. The comment was made yesterday on the programme. The HSC's response is as follows. All efforts are being made by the Older Persons Service to support older people availing of respite in Donegal. At the same time, the service must also offer post-acute hospital care to those older people who need a continued level of support. In order to facilitate the demand for both respite and post-acute care, some respite services are now provided in private nursing homes within the area, all of which are registered facilities with HICWA and have the ability to provide the required care level. This will be kept under review on an ongoing basis. So that's the response we've had to that issue from the HSE. We've also had a caller who's just asking, are there any hedges being cut in the Ardra area, particularly down around the Mahara Road? It's November now and still nothing has been done. And that's a question asked by a caller. I want to remind you that we have our Home for Christmas campaign here on Highland Radio. No matter where you are in the world, we're on a mission to make Christmas extra special for one lucky family. We want to bring a family home for Christmas so they can see their loved ones and experience the magic of the season. If you'd love to come home for Christmas, are you being prohibited by the rising cost of inflation and travel prohibiting you from doing so? We can make it happen for one lucky family this Christmas. All you need to do is tell us who you wish to nominate and why, whether it be yourself or a family member who's living away from home. Simply email us the information and the details of the person you're nominating. Tell us a bit about them or you and why they're deserving of this great prize, and include contact details of the person. You can then go to highlandradio.com, fill out your details on the Home for Christmas section, or email all information, including all relevant contact telephone numbers, to homeforchristmas@highlandradio.com. Alternatively, you can send your nomination by post to Home for Christmas, Highland Radio, Mountain Top, Letterkenny, County Donegal. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Joined in studio by a Dr. Joseph O'Neill of Letterkenny Palestine, also involved in Interfaith for Palestine. Joseph, a very good morning to you.
Thank you very much, Donal.
I know you were in with Greg last week as well, Joseph, and obviously we're all watching with horror at what's unfolding in Gaza. Some perhaps chink of light with the opening of the border at Rafah between Gaza and Egypt, and we've seen some people get out, particularly some injured children, but those that are getting out, it's just a mere drop in the ocean. It's a trickle compared to the numbers that are actually seriously ill, in need of urgent care and treatment in conditions within Gaza which are intolerable.
That's correct. That's very good. A very good summary. Thank you very much. The key word here is genocide. And that's a word that is being increasingly used about this situation. Genocide is the systematic attempt to destroy a people, not necessarily to kill them all, but to destroy their lives, their physical habitations, their schools, their religious life, mosques, churches, etc., and just to make the life totally intolerable. And that's what we're seeing. And increasing numbers of genocide experts are speaking out now, something which they should have done a very long time ago.
The Israeli claim that they are retaliating and responding in kind to what Hamas started on October 7th. You believe we've gone way beyond that, if we were ever there in the first place.
Well, that's an interesting comment. And I think the other word, key word here is context. And the context is 1948. Now, our interfaith group has been watching this situation with horror and speaking of it as a genocide for over 10 years. The context is 1948. 1948, the Israelis, terrified with any number of massacres, terrified 750,000 Palestinians out of their homes. And then they did this again in 1967 when they terrified another 300,000 Palestinians out of their homes. And there's millions of Palestinians, refugees both within Israel, within Palestine, and within the surrounding countries of Lebanon, Syria and Jordan.
In terms of what we're seeing at the moment, the Irish government is working at a UN level, it says, to try and resolve the situation. It's working at EU level as well. And now I suspect you're not happy at all with what Ursula von der Leyen is saying and the approach being taken by her. I think it's fairly clear to say you aren't happy with that, and that's probably putting it mildly, I suspect. Is the Irish government doing enough?
Of course not. I have to say, it's very important to accentuate the positive, not to be negative. And Michael D. Higgins has been fantastic. He's spoken up very clearly about the issue. And he may be small of stature, but he's great in moral stature. And I think the Irish people greatly love him for speaking up about this issue. And he's been viciously attacked by the Israeli embassy here in Dublin, who should really apologise. And many people are talking about expelling the Israeli embassy, both for their behaviour with respect to the Irish government and, with their supporting of the genocide.
In terms of Micheál Martin as Foreign Affairs Minister, I won't ask you to leave marks out of 10, but in terms of what he's doing at the moment, he's probably trying to, claim he's trying to walk a very thin diplomatic line at this point in time. Is he doing enough?
I'll start by saying we are an interfaith group. We are apolitical. So we focus on the religious, spiritual and sectarian aspects of the issue, and we take into account the cultural, economic, social and political aspects. Politics is a very difficult business. I couldn't be a politician. We can speak out very clearly about the moral issues. The moral issue here is of genocide. And it is great to see Irish politicians speaking out, but they need to take action. And there's a number of actions, very simple ones they could take.
We heard a call this morning on the programme, indeed, a caller saying that what we should now be looking at doing in this country is breaking off diplomatic relations with Israel. Now, we've heard it was Bolivia did so yesterday. Is there an argument to be made that it's time that if a country like Ireland, as part of the EU, were to break off diplomatic relations with Israel, that that would send a very strong statement? Realistically speaking, is that going to happen?
We're apolitical, and we believe in big politics, the politics of the common good. So they've got difficult decisions, politicians. I don't envy them. I think one thing you could do is you could suspend the Israeli embassy for a length of time. I think when this genocide is over, it's not a war, it's not a conflict, it's a genocide. When this genocide is over, or this particular aspect of it, we need to start talking. And, you know, just as a principle in our group, dialogue is very, very important. And, you know, we would say that's what they should do. There are a number of other very simple measures they can take.
Are you disappointed? And I don't want to dwell on political figures, but I mean, even in terms of there being public figures, Ursula von der Leyen, a lot's been said at the difference in approach that she took when Russia invaded Ukraine.
Absolutely.
That she was absolutely black and white with regards to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And she is now presenting herself as being very diplomatically nuanced when it comes to Israel, Gaza. But she was quite blunt when it came to Russia, Ukraine. A whiff perhaps there of hypocrisy?
That's a very good point. We were delighted. We have a witness at the Tesco roundabout every midday Saturday for the last 3 weeks. And this week we had a number of Ukrainians. We were delighted about that. And many Palestinians talk about Palestine before Ukraine and after Ukraine. Before Ukraine, Palestine has been undergoing genocide under military occupation for 75 years. Ukraine has been militarily occupied for less than 2 years. When we compare and contrast the support for white Christian European Ukrainians and the support we give to more or less brown, mostly Muslim, but also Christian Palestinians, there is obviously double standards and hypocrisy absolutely facing us. And this unfortunate last 3 weeks, that's very unfortunate. The silver lining in this cloud is it gives us an opportunity to look at the true facts of what's happening to the Palestinians for the last 75 years, and that is genocide.
There is a strong support within Donegal for Palestine and for Gaza, but we have seen attacks on Palestinians in recent weeks in the west of the county, and that's something I'm sure that you'd be very concerned about.
This is very sad. I haven't heard of any attacks on Ukrainians, and I'm delighted that Ireland has taken in so many Ukrainians and done a very charitable thing. That's wonderful. But I haven't heard of any attacks on Ukrainians, and it's kind of troubling. It's troubling that these two Palestinians have been attacked. The other thing I would mention in this context is our group, we've now decided to be proactive about Islamophobia, and we've actually taken we've recorded a hate incident with the local police here in Letterkenny, and the police have been extremely helpful and understanding and are supportive of that action.
And is that going to, well, you can't say too much, I presume, at this point in time, because it's going through those channels.
Well, I would say our job is to get the ball rolling. There's whole organisations, paid anti-racist organisations, and it's their job to carry that ball forward.
In terms of what people can do, because a lot of people will say, look, this is a huge international political event. There's governments, there's the UN, it's too big for me. Yeah. I feel that I want to do something, but I don't know what to do.
Okay.
What can people
do? Thank you for asking that question. There's personal initiatives and there's community initiatives. We have a three-point plan in our group. Now, we're an interfaith group, so we talk about prayer. So our three-point plan is very simple. It's pray, talk, act. So either pray or be mindful if you're not a believer about the Palestinians and their persecutors. Talk about Palestine and talk about the genocide. And act in whatever way is appropriate for your situation. And for most people, it will be praying and talking. And that's good. Then there's community actions. And the community action is very straightforward. Over 70% of countries in the world formally recognise Palestine. Over 10 European countries formally recognise Palestine, including the Vatican, which doesn't do things in a hurry. And Ireland, it's a very simple cost-free exercise. It's just to join the majority of the world and to formally recognise the state of Palestine. Now, that's a symbolic gesture, but it's an extremely important one. If you talk about Europe to Palestinians, they say there's one country in Europe that is wholeheartedly in support of Palestine and their human rights and respectful of the people who are attacking them, and that is Ireland. So if Ireland did that, that might pave the way forward for a lot of other European countries who are on the brink, perhaps Spain, perhaps Italy, perhaps Luxembourg, to move forward on that. So that's formally recognising Palestine, and that's up for the politicians to do. The second thing is there's a thing called the Occupied Territories Bill. I don't know whether you're familiar with this.
Yes.
That's a bill that was started off by Senator Francis Black, who's also a great singer, and that is the promise, if it went through, that we wouldn't buy products from any militarily occupied zone. Now, that has been stalled in the Parliament, and everybody knows it's the right thing to do, and I'm not going to mention any politicians here, but there are political groups who clearly have stalled that, and there's not the political will. There must be the political will to push that forward. And the third thing we can do, either as a state or individually, is boycott. Boycott is a fantastic Irish tradition that's been running peacefully since 1880, when it was brought in against Captain Boycott in Mayo. And we can boycott. One of the things, I'm a retired doctor, we suggest is boycotting Teva Pharmaceuticals. Teva Pharmaceuticals is an Israeli company, and the profits go towards the genocide. It produces generic medications. So if you go into your GP, as I did, and he was giving me this medication, I spotted Teva on the bottle. I say, look, I hope you don't mind, but I'd rather have that medication from another company. Straightforward. And then, of course, there's loads of other companies. I won't name any names, but there's a fast food joint in Letterkenny. And somebody has told me recently from one of the independent fast food joints that he's doing great business because his international fast food joint has been giving free hamburgers to Israeli soldiers. And he said that has had an amazing effect on the youth and increased his business. So it's a great example where being moral is also good for business. So that's my simple note here.
I want to talk to you about anti-Semitism versus anti-Zionism, because one of the things, and we saw a lot of debate in the UK with Jeremy Corbyn in recent years as well, and basically a situation developed where effectively opposition to the state of Israel became conflated with anti-Semitism. Now, as you've said, you are a predominantly a religious group, and you have zero tolerance for sectarianism and for sectarian defamation. You would not in any way present yourself or your colleagues as anti-Semites. But I would imagine you would be relatively comfortable with the phrase anti-Zionist.
Yes. Our group is, which has been running for about 10 years now, is a group of moderate Jews and Gentiles. And every week we have a discussion on Zoom about the situation in Palestine. And our stock phrase is, we are against any form of sectarianism. And what is more important in the current context, we're against any form of sectarian defamation, either open or, what is more common nowadays, insinuated. And we are very happy to help anybody who is having problems in this respect to come to us, because we have we've many lawyers in our group, and we've received a number of apologies from people who are using that tactic against our members, and people have apologised to us.
So, I mean, it does need, and I think it's an interesting one, because, I mean, what happened in the UK probably didn't help in terms of that debate that was going on there, because, I mean, effectively the conflation of opposition to the actions of a state with anti-Semitism, basically, I suspect a lot of people are thinking, oh, if I speak out against what Israel is doing, am I laying myself open to the charge of being anti-Semitic? Yeah. And that is something that people would worry about, because obviously there is, behind the history of Judaism, obviously we have the Holocaust, and so much goes back to that, and, you know, so much debate gets wrapped up in these issues of, am I being anti-Semitic? And if I'm being anti-Semitic, am I in some way negating what happened during the Holocaust? Then others will say, look, I mean, given the experience of the Jewish people, surely more than anyone they should understand issues of genocide.
Absolutely. One of the, you know, I listened to a lot of comments, and there was a very good comment this morning on social media, Jewish woman saying, never again, which is a slogan used with respect to that event, means never again for anyone, including Palestinians. So that's the phrase that Jewish lady said. And I'm very pleased that when the Jewish speaker came to our event this weekend, she spoke out quite clearly and said it is a genocide, what's happening to the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. So that was good news.
I just read this out to you. Cotter says, waiting on you both to mention the genocide that took place in Israel by the rulers of Palestine that started this whole disaster. I hate war, but when your people are brutalised, you don't stand by. I think the first question I asked was about the actions of Hamas on the 7th of October. And again, I'll put the question to you again in case our caller didn't hear it. I mean, what Israel is arguing at this point in time is that it is responding to the actions of Hamas, who went into Israel, killed in excess of 1,000 people and took over 200 hostages.
The context of this issue is the 75-year-long genocide known as the Nakba of the Palestinians. Massive amounts of Palestinians are killed every year, quite often young men, children. So that's the context, and genocide is wrong, and we just need to identify that's what's happening. Our group has been saying it's a genocide for years.
Yeah.
This unfortunate event in the last 3 weeks, you can view it in a number of ways. You can view it as a prison break. You can view it as very similar to the reaction in the Warsaw Ghetto, when people broke out in the Warsaw Ghetto in World War II. They knew it was probably going to be unsuccessful, but they had to do it. So, you know, we believe that destroying the government of the Palestinian people is a terrible thing to do. And if they have a government, the government needs to be talked with, and they need to discuss how to make the world a better place, both for the 2.3 million Palestinians whose country has been absolutely carpet bombed, like Dresden, like Hiroshima. The pictures are absolutely horrific, and the pictures of the children who've been murdered in Gaza. There's no need to continue this genocide. They just need to stop and talk.
Another caller says, genocide is what Palestine wants to do to Israel, that Palestine effectively wants to drive the state of Israel and all Jews into the sea.
No. Anybody, there is a lot of malicious, nuanced and very sophisticated propaganda from the genocidalists. The Palestinians are a forgiving people, and they want, all they want is the freedom that you and I have to walk around Letterkenny Town to do our shopping. Something as simple as that. The freedom to go to school without having to go through a checkpoint every day. The freedom not to have jackboots breaking down their door in the middle of the night, terrorising them and their children. And the freedom not to be interned. There's massive, we had internment in Ulster, there's massive internment and torture in the for the Palestinians. It's an absolutely long-standing, it's actually been going on for so long, it's become normalised. It's a sort of a bureaucratic genocide. The good news is, all of this, the UN, for all its faults and its failures, has documented this genocide very, very carefully. We have got plenty of evidence for the International Criminal Court. The other thing to remember is Israel has got a massive army, a massive air force, a massive navy. The Palestinians have nothing compared to that. Nothing.
And finally, I'll put this to you. A caller is asking, does your speaker condemn Hamas? And in particular, does your speaker condemn the use of hospitals by Hamas, which is leading to the activities of the Israeli army? Effectively, what they're saying is Israel is attacking hospitals, not because they're hospitals in which Palestinian people are being treated, but because they're buildings in which Hamas have bases and buildings which Hamas are using for military purposes.
He's speaking nonsense. Our group is apolitical. One of our mottos is founded on love, focused on truth. And there's been a lot of mistruth about the genocide of the Palestinians. And just a thought experiment is, can you imagine if Letterkenny Hospital was blown to bits because somebody said there might be some bad people in there? No, it's no excuse to murder men, women and children lying in incubators, pregnant women. There's no excuse whatsoever for that type of behaviour.
Dr. Joseph O'Neill, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
That's Dr. Joseph O'Neill there from the Letterkenny Palestine Group and also Interfaith for Palestine. And as he said, there are demonstrations at 12 noon every Saturday in Letterkenny. They will continue, I take it, this weekend and into the future. If you want to get in touch with the programme, you can do so 086 60 25000 for your texts or WhatsApp messages, 074 91 25000, if you want to give us a call. Now, there has been a lot of discussion in recent months and years indeed about the four-lane road and access into Letterkenny, lights on the Polestar and the traffic congestion they're causing and difficulties getting in and out, particularly on that sort of four-lane dual carriageway side of the town. And for many, many years, the widespread belief has been that what Letterkenny ultimately needs is a second bridge over the Swilly, the Bonaghy Link, as it has become known. Joined on the line by Pádraig, who has taken action and started a petition. Pádraig, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Pádraig, tell us about this petition that you've started.
So I started a petition probably about a week ago. I wasn't expecting it to take off the way it did, but it's brought me here today. Because daily commutes in and out of the town is becoming a nightmare. We find ourselves stuck in traffic and wasting precious hours doing so. And the primary access route in and out of the town and the recent works, which involved quite a substantial investment, we see were of little benefit. One such comment, since I kind of took some images and posted them online, and that's what kind of kicked us off, was we started off with four lanes. We spent millions and ended up with four lanes and a set of traffic lights. So I'm not here to take away from the work that's been done to date, but we need to look forward. And it's evident that in a town with a population of 22,500 people, based on last year's census was, or 2022, sorry, people, that it's not working. So it takes me to the point of why we need the Bonaghy Link Bridge to ensure a smooth flow of traffic, which is essential for a number of reasons. And I've kind of categorised it under four. based on the feedback and research on the issue, and if we can touch on each stall, please.
Absolutely, yeah, please do.
So we have the emergency response and the safety concerns. So what's concerning is the effect on the emergency services, so the quick access for emergency services, being our Gardaí and fire and medical personnel, that can be a matter of life and death in critical situations, and the congestion just puts people's lives at risk. And we need to be seen to be removing barriers for an already under pressure sector, not putting them in place, as well as public or public attending hospital appointments, doctor's appointments, dropping kids to school, all that stuff. It's very important. So the smooth traffic, why it reduces congestion, which means less time wasted in traffic jams. So from a safety aspect, lowering stress levels for commuters, which is a safety concern in terms of the because it's a higher likelihood of accidents. If people are stressed out, people end up rushing and it promotes road rage, people lane hopping, all that good stuff. And then not necessarily accidents on the spot, but people are rushing, maybe trying to catch, make up the 5 minutes they've lost and that kind of thing. So we need to be making our roads safer for everyone by creating a more harmonious driving environment. The second point would be on the economic viability. So efficient traffic flow encourages our business activities and investments. So we need to be making it easier for our customers and our employees to be reaching their destinations, so we can ensure essential services such as our shops and schools and our new ATU and our facilities are accessible for all, which will boost our local economy. Like our local businesses, I'm sure, are suffering and have suffered and will continue to suffer in this area, and especially in the run-up to Christmas and everything else. Like, it really is shocking. All aspects of the town, it's just bumper to bumper. I mean, if we spend less time in traffic, it means you have bigger benefits for the businesses and the economy. So if we're not sitting in traffic, then we're more likely to be productive elsewhere. So it's maybe spent time with family, shopping, attending events, dropping kids off at activities. These things all keep our premises open and our employees and jobs, and keep our economy going. We need to be promoting that. It brings me on to like our community and tourism and encouraging stronger community connections. So we've all been, I suppose, locked down for long enough at this point. And I mean, we need to be encouraging strong community connections and encouraging people to interact and socialise and participate in events, and which will give our public basically a better quality of life and making our town more attractive to live and work in, and attract more tourism and travel and boost our local industry. You know, and then our local events, our local kind of hotels and restaurants, like our newly 4-star hotel and stuff, and it's right in the middle of it there. I mean, they employ a lot of people, as do all the businesses around the town, and have a lot of overheads, and there's bills to be paid. And I mean, we need to be encouraging, doing whatever we can to help that.
From the point of view, I was going to say, from the point of view of the economic argument, has the economic argument been made sufficiently to government by local politicians? Because certainly what you were saying there, and what the widespread belief in the wider area would be, is that the new bridge would improve the local economy by improving access, by making the area more efficient in terms of transport, and by improving traffic flow. Do you think that economic argument is being articulated strongly enough, and that there is a sufficient understanding that there would be a very, when you look at sort of cost-benefit analysis, that it would come out very positive on the plus side?
Well, I'm sure they're doing their very best, and I'm sure they're pushing it as hard as they can. But I think this is a bigger issue than a local issue. This has gone on since, I mean, I have it on good authority, like there's soil samples taken for this in the 80s. You know what I mean, for the Bonagie Link Bridge. So I think this is a bigger issue. Yes, they can push it and they can bring it to the SNT or the council, and the council can go to the TIA and stuff, and they can push it as hard as they can. I'm not sure if there were surveys carried out on the benefits of or the pluses and minuses of it, but I'm sure they've done their due diligence and they're pushing it as hard as they can. You know, and from an environmental and like the planning perspective, so the congestion and the increasing fuel consumption with the current prices and fuel and everything else. So it would help us save fuel and reduce our carbon emissions, like in our improving our air quality and making us more efficient, so we could reduce our overall environmental footprint of transportation, like, which is a big thing with climate change and everything else.
Back in the mid 1990s and even the early 90s, the big discussion at that time, when there was various studies of transport done within Letterkenny, was that 70% of the traffic at station roundabout didn't need to be there. It was people that were going elsewhere, but they had no choice but to travel through the station roundabout. And that was a lot of the justification for building the Neil T. Blaney Road, the Paddy Hart Road, and the Polestar roundabout. And a lot of that was done because the argument was there was people using station roundabout that had no need to be there. Has the Polestar become the new roundabout where 70% of people using it don't need to be there, and the Bonagie Link would ensure that people from the Remelton side of Letterkenny, from the Remelton Road, and really from that whole area that can go down Business Park Road, and then if they could use the bridge, which would be somewhere in the vicinity of the Thorn, there or thereabouts. I mean, I know I've seen one drawing that suggested it be just behind Arena 7 there, where the new Kinnegar Brewery is, that it would be there, a road would go down through there. Other suggestions, no, Councillor Liam Blaney wants to see slightly further out, nearer to Remelton, closer maybe to the Silver Tassie. There's been various discussions as to where it would be, and that's going to become obviously a live discussion in the years to come. But it seems to me that station roundabout now is going to be replaced by the Polestar, as the roundabout people are using that don't need to be there. And if we could get less people on the Polestar roundabout, that's going to do an awful lot to relieve the congestion we have there.
100%. I mean, you've that whole coastal area of once you go over that direction in terms of heading for Rathmullen, up the mountain top. I mean, you see the traffic coming on there during the summer, and it's bumper to bumper with towing caravans and everything else, people coming on to go on holidays or weekends away and heading to the coastal areas, but everybody has to come through them two lanes coming into Letterkenny, you know, before they can go in any direction. And then you have the other traffic then that's trying to avoid that, and they're going the alternative routes, be it up Cullen Road or up Lake. And I mean, them roads aren't fit for the traffic that's on them, and the Lower Dromore Road the same. You know, people are cutting in off the dual carriageway coming over Lower Dromore, and it's bumper to bumper, you know, and it's wingmer to wingmer, let's say, you know, as traffic try and pass each other up past Alverna and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been getting some good reaction to the petition online, several hundred signatories already.
I mean, in the last week, like, we're kicked off and sent out a few photos online, and then I kind of thought to myself, well, I mean, rather than raising it with the politicians, because as I say, it's gone on 30 plus years, try and do something ourselves, and obviously have them backing us as well. But I mean, it's trying to push it as hard as we can and try and get it resolved as quickly as possible. I know it's not going to happen before Christmas, but perhaps in the interim we can look at some alternative arrangements around the area for traffic in and out of the town, because people just aren't going to come to Letterkenny to shop. They're going to go to Strabane, or they're going to go to Derry. So, I mean, we need to find maybe a facility somewhere outside the town where we can do like a park and ride or something as an alternative. In the meantime, maybe for around the Christmas period, maybe facilitated by the SMT and the council, you know, to ensure that the businesses continue to reap the rewards.
No, that is an issue that has been under active discussion at municipal district level, certainly. But now, whether they would have something in place for Christmas this year, at this point, I'm not sure. There are certainly a number of sites being talked about as potential park and ride sites. Now, we would be cutting it very fine to try and get something in place, I suspect, for Christmas 2024. Christmas 2025 might be, an attainable idea. In terms of planning, because we spoke there basically about route selection, and, you know, there's been some discussion about where this road would go. And there's a lot of studies being done. Now, we're not seeing the details. We're not seeing the information. The last report we had from Donegal County Council was that, you know, a lot of environmental studies and environmental impacts are going on, and they're looking at route selection and they're looking at potential plans. Is there enough talk at the moment locally about where that road might go, and what the look of the Bonagie Link and the roads either side of it might be?
We're not hearing it. We're not hearing it, to be honest. If it is going on in the background, it's not in public view. It should be. I mean, if we're looking at a communication, a monthly communication or a quarterly communication or something, where we can see what progress has been made. Because, I mean, I've looked through in the last number of weeks, looked through over the history on from Google searches and stuff, and it's, I mean, this is going on. There's a lot of, let's say, well, there's positives, and then there's like, yes, we're making good progress here and making good progress, and then it just seems to fall again, and it seems to be where we're being drip fed kind of bits of information, and then yes, this is positive, and it hits the headlines for a couple of weeks, and then it dies away again, and it's forgotten about until such times as we're in a position like we are now, where we're struggling. And I suppose one of the big concerns was, as I say, about the emergency services, like, and if there was a serious collision or something on the Manor Road there, how is the emergency services, what plan was put in place there for if we're sitting in four lanes of traffic for getting emergency vehicles out the road, where it's now, we have a central reserve there of concrete where we can't pull into anymore to allow traffic vehicles to pass, emergency vehicles to pass. You know, it's really shocking, like, the thought process behind us, like.
Yeah. Well, Padraig, we'll be watching with interest what happens with the petition and several hundred signatories already, as we've said, and I'm sure that number is going to increase. It's on change.org, yeah?
It's on change.org/Bonagie Link Bridge, or it can be got on any of the social media platforms on hashtag Bonagie Link Bridge.
Yeah. So if you go and search Bonagie Link Bridge, you're going to find that fairly quickly. Padraig, we watch this with interest. In the meantime, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Perfect. Thanks for the invite.
Okay, look, Padraig, it's our pleasure. That's Padraig there, who has started the petition on the Bonagie Link Bridge. And, you know, yeah, we have been speaking about the Bonagie Link so much for the past, I mean, I would say 20 years at least. I mean, the new bridge over the Swilly, certainly 20 years and probably longer. I just can't remember when we first had the discussions. But I mean, you know, it certainly was not yesterday or the day before yesterday that these discussions started. Whether we're going to see progress, Donegal County Council saying, yeah, there is progress being made and there is a lot of work being done behind the scenes. Now, as Padraig says, we're not hearing necessarily what's happening behind the scenes. It might be no harm to get to hear that in the coming year. I want to say a very good morning to all those who are watching us on our Facebook pages and on YouTube as well. Good morning to Maggie and also to Paul, to Audrey and to Mari as well. And to everyone who's listening, have a very good day. It's 8 minutes to 11 almost. We're going to take a short break back after these. Now, we know that a delegation of four Irish and international MEPs were in Donegal this week to see firsthand the devastation caused by defective building materials and the impact it's had on householders. A complete report will then be compiled for the EU Commission. One of those who was on that visit was Fine Gael MEP Colm Markey. Colm, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Colm, looking back over the past number of days, the EU group arrived on Monday and was in Donegal for a few days, also visiting other areas, Mayo and others. How did the visit go and what will this visit achieve?
The visit went well. We met with, we will say, the action group, the people who submitted the petitions in the first place. Then we also met with, if you like, technical people that had been supporting the families. And, well, the most important thing, I think, we got to see the houses themselves, got to see the impact it was having on people's lives. And I think the need to get the issue resolved as quickly as possible was very much driven home in terms of the experience that people got. We met with the representatives from the council, engineers. We then went on to meet with the minister in Dublin on Wednesday morning. So I suppose at two levels. One was we saw clearly the issues and the challenges people were having to take advantage of the scheme. some of the concerns there was around, let's say, the administrative burden, the access to support and to whether through the council or through the department or various locations in terms of people being able to access the different. And then those concerns, I suppose, around things like houses that were in floodplains having to rebuild in the same place or having to build to a 2008 standard of regulations. And there was a number of things raised that really, I think, we will probably include in a report that will ultimately go to the Petitions Committee and then on to the Commission. But hopefully it will feed back here in Ireland too to some of the concerns that were expressed. And I suppose, first things first, it was about the houses and the families and trying to get them resolved as quickly as possible. The second thing then was very much around making sure that this never happened again and what can be done to ensure it doesn't happen again. And then finally, I suppose, we were looking at things like, let's say, is it possible to, provide zero-waste finance for families who can't raise finance probably because their houses have very little asset value to leverage finance against. And on top of that, like that zero rate that they could get bridging finances at no cost to be able to access the grants. So it's things like that. And one other big area, I think, is the idea of the shortage of skills to actually do the scale of the work that's involved and what has to be done. That ultimately people are talking about, if you like, the fact that there's a 100% redress grant to 420,000. People feel that may not be enough. I think one of the problems with that is the lack of skills. And if we can, if you like, increase the capacity to do the works, because if we ultimately don't have the capacity to do the works, no matter what size of grant you put there, the price is going to continue to rise.
These issues are issues that have been well documented by campaigners and have been for quite some time. Can I put to you a comment by Luke Ming Flanagan, MEP, who said he expected, well, he didn't expect, but he wants the two Fine Gael MEPs to apologise, because he says the frustration that you and the other European MEPs that were present in Donegal and elsewhere over the past number of days, the frustrations that you will have encountered, the problems you'll have seen, and the frustrations of the people living in those houses are frustrations born of the fact that your party in government over several years has utterly failed to address the situation.
I think the Fine Gael government have put forward originally the 90-20 scheme, the 90-10 scheme, and now it's 100% up to 420,000. So, like, they have put that in place. It's a package of north of 2.2 billion. So to say the government hasn't done anything in relation to this is just not fair. I think it's not enough. We need to do more. We need to address some of the issues that we've just talked about. And we need to address the concerns that people have, the like of whether or not foundations need to be addressed, whether we can get greater flexibilities and less bureaucracy in the system. It's clear people don't have the confidence to take up the scheme at the moment. And we need to address some of the issues around that and the roadblocks around finance. And that's what we're about here. We're not about starting pointing fingers of a blame game. I fully accept that we would like to have this dealt with years ago. But it is a complex situation. The finance has been put on the table. The finance isn't enough. The grants are put on the table, I suppose. But it needs more than that. It needs skills. It needs availability of finance so people can access those grants. And it's not just, like, at the end of the day, the various stakeholders, like the government, the county councils, the banking sector, all the stakeholders, they have to come together to get this solution. I fully accept that it isn't as far on as we'd like it to be at this stage. But the only way we'll move on further is to deal with the issues and not looking to try and make a political football out of it. We want to get the issue resolved, and that's where my concern is. So if we can, at European level, identify, let's say, through the ECB, where we can get the finance, or indeed look how we can build capacity in terms of availability of skills, that's what we need to do, not start a political football that just drags the thing out for more and more years.
Can the EU Commission give directions? Can the EU Commission give directions, or the Parliament give directions to the Irish government to speed up? Because certainly we've been speaking about defective blocks. First of all, MICA, then obviously other defective and deleterious materials came into the discussion. But I mean, this discussion has been going on for well over 10 years. And it's not a new discussion. It's not news, as it were, to people in Donegal that defective blocks is an issue. We know that and have known that for ages. I mean, can the EU do something to speed up the process? Because the political progress in Dublin, certainly it seems, has been, to be charitable about it, moving at a snail's pace.
That's where we want to focus. We want to focus on a number of key areas, the like of the availability of finance. I think Europe can play a contribution in terms of that. And in terms of, let's say, the administrative burden, that to ensure that it's a streamlined system. All we can do ultimately is write a report. That report goes to the Commission, and hopefully that report can be taken on board at national level as well. We want to highlight the issue at European level. That brings, if you like, greater pressure at national level to act as well. But there are probably certain elements of it that we can have an impact on. But ultimately, it's also about highlighting the issue at European level to make sure it doesn't happen again, number one, and to support the families, and put the pressure back on at national to try and, if you like, reduce the roadblocks. And I certainly intend to engage further with the families and with the interest groups so that we can put into a report the things that will make a difference. And the like of, for instance, concerns about the if you like, elements of the scheme, that we either allay those concerns or address those concerns. It's one or the other. And I think those sort of actions are something that we can push to make sure happen. And one thing that I would like to see on top of that is when a similar scenario happened with Priory Hall in Dublin, there was a whole project group put together of all the stakeholders to drive forward the solution. That was proposed for here, but it hasn't even met yet. And we want to put that sort of pressure, the same as the pressure that was put on the Department of Housing yesterday when we met them in Dublin, about the different issues. We want to highlight the issues that haven't moved forward and put pressure on to try and move them forward if we can.
Colin Markey, MEP, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.